Last time I Skyped with you from Cairo, and at the time you were feeling pretty comfortable and confident in your neighborhood and sort of the neighborhood watch group that had been set up. But obviously something must have changed from that point, which might have been a Monday or a Tuesday, until Friday when you left. What can you describe what happened?
Yeah, that's a hard one. That's the first question everybody asks is, okay, what, you know, was there an event or was there something that happened? And there really wasn't one thing. Actually, when I talked to you, we did feel safe. And actually, when we left, we felt fairly safe in the community. So I don't think it was just one single thing. I think it was more of the question we kept asking ourselves, or, you know, do we feel safe? And the answer was always yes. But then the question was, do you want to be here until you're not safe? And so that line of, when's it too soon to go, opposed to when's it too late to go? And we chose to, you know, if we were going to make an error, we wanted to make an error on the side of leaving too early, opposed to leaving too late. Actually, it's been really calm since we've left, relatively speaking. Talking to friends back in Mahdi, they say it hasn't changed. The curfew has been relaxed, and then they stiffen it up again, and then they relax it. And finally, the friends I have there just say they don't follow it too much. You know, so things haven't changed a whole lot, but we just, if we were going to make a mistake, we'd rather make a mistake on the side of leaving a little early. And the day we left, there was that was the Friday, the day of departure for Mubarak. Then the crowds were saying that was the day they wanted him to go. And that, thank goodness, turned out to be a very calm day, but it just as easily could have been, I think, a repeat, except on a much larger scale, of the previous Wednesday, and when there was a lot of violence. And so we didn't want to sit around and wait for that.
You described Mahdi, the suburb where you lived, as when we last spoke, as sort of an international neighborhood. I wonder, once you got out of Mahdi, what was your trip to the airport like? Once you got out of your sort of known neighborhood, did you find a different kind of Cairo than you expected on your way to the airport?
I don't know if it was as different as we expected. We definitely knew from folks that had ventured out, whether it was people, colleagues bringing students in that had been out on school trips, they would drive out to the airport, bring them back. And so you'd get reports. I had a friend who'd ride around on his bike, kind of checking out the perimeter of Mahdi and seeing the tanks and that kind of thing. So the morning we left, we were concerned, you know, what the trip would be like. But it was actually quite calm. I was surprised at the number of tanks. There were, you know, you'd heard that there were tanks around, and we'd had seen tanks in our neighborhood. But the number of tanks that were out, places where I would normally ride in the mornings for exercise, there were tanks all over. A fairly large grocery store called Carrefour had been looted, and we had heard that. But then when you actually see it, it means a lot more than when you're just hearing about it. So we were surprised by the number of tanks and the number of military personnel. But I was also surprised by how quiet the streets were, even on the ring road, which is normally just crazy. It's like a 3-lane highway, but they'll have probably 6 cars abreast driving on it because they don't follow the lanes. And it wasn't crowded at all.
So no angry mobs surrounding the airport or anything like that?
No, thank goodness. And that was another reason we wanted to leave, is the airport had been fairly calm. And then when we started hearing more about the pro-Mubarak people, there was discussion of those folks were a little bit more savvy as far as taking control of things. And one of the first things you would want control of is the airport. Whereas I think the vast majority of people who were anti-Mubarak were just your regular people wanting to see their country change. And I don't think they were thinking in those strategic terms. They were just more emotion driven, more of that, you know, our lives are not great and we want to change. So the airport was pretty calm, considering you had a lot of people very stressed in the airport trying to get out of there.
Did you end up taking a regular commercial flight, or did you somehow connect with the UN or the embassy to get out?
No, actually, our school chartered a plane. Yeah, so we had our own charter, which was very nice. School was very helpful with us. Once they said that, oh, you know, we would, we're opening this up. If you'd like to leave, you can. They were very helpful getting us a charter, and there were 42 of us on the plane that went all over the place once we got to Frankfurt.
And so you flew to Frankfurt, and then where, and then where?
Flew to Frankfurt, overnighted there, and then did a 10.5-hour flight to Seattle, and then overnighted there, and then came to Sitka.
Frankfurt to Seattle, that doesn't sound too bad.
Yeah, you know, I was so relieved when we found out. Actually, the previous night, we were up all night long trying to arrange flights, because I knew the school was going to have trouble finding a flight. They forget how far away Sitka is. And I couldn't find any flights that were decent. Most of them were in the Midwest. With the snowstorms, I'm like, great, we're going to be stranded in Chicago. But the school let us take the 10.5-hour flight, which was great.
Were your affairs pretty much settled? I mean, or did you just literally, did you just throw a couple of things into a bag and head out?
We pretty much had, actually, we had several backpacks packed. We had a backpack packed that was basically if somebody knocked on our door and said, you need to leave now. And so it was one bag. And then we had another set of bags, two backpacks, that were, if we had a little bit of time, that we could throw a couple of things in. We had 2 hours notice with this, so we had time to throw some things in. After, well, actually, we had 2 hours to make our decision. And so once we made our decision, we had the night. So we were up all night deciding what to pack, and then trying to pack up our apartment as best we could, so that if we, basically worst case, if we don't get to come back and somebody packs our stuff out, you know, they would be able to go to a particular room and pack it out. But pretty much everything's just left as is, so pretty much undone. We definitely would like to, at a minimum, get back there to clean up and figure out what we have and what we don't have.
Were any of your Egyptian neighbors, were they active in the protest? Did the wave in Tahrir Square come out and enfold the people you lived with in Mahdi?
Where we live is an expat community. A lot of oil, a lot of embassy people, banking. And so the regular Egyptians that are there tend to be in the service of the expats, whether it's working at the local grocery store or being what's called a BOAB, the building manager for apartments, taxi drivers. And I didn't see them being active. I think they, kind of the hierarchy of needs for them was more of, I've got to make a little bit of money because prices were going up. And the BOABs were more worried about taking care of their tenants, which was amazing to see. You know, here's people that literally have nothing, and they're out all night protecting Westerners who, you know, have quite a bit. And so it was interesting to see. But most that I saw, most that I talked to, just were still in Mahdi. They had their opinions about what was happening. But I didn't see them partaking in the protest per se. We did have a protest go through. I couldn't count how many people it was, but there was, you know, somewhere between 30, probably 50 people, which was very unusual to see in Mahdi marching, and they were pro-Mubarak. And I actually saw a car stop by our apartment. Guy on the passenger side jumped out with a rifle and jumped into the protest. So, you know, we did see that, but that was just one incident. For the most part, the people around us were just trying to live.
And what was your sense of that pro-Mubarak rally? There was a kind of, well, I guess from watching the news, you got sort of the perception that the pro-Mubarak rallies were less spontaneous. They had, as you were saying, they were a bit more strategic. Mm-hmm. And did you get the sense that it was staged or spontaneous and genuine?
I didn't see enough to make a very good judgment. My impression would have been, from the little I saw, that it was staged, and I say that because to rally people in Mahdi, there had been no talk of that I'd heard. There hadn't been anything before that, so it would have been somewhat surprising to just have it show up. And they had a huge Egyptian flag, which was one of the things I spotted that I don't think the regular person in the street would have had. That would have been hard to come by.
Dan, what about, I understand what you're saying about the Egyptians you had the most routine contact with, the people who were in sort of service jobs in Mahdi, but even just living with them for as long as you did, and living in the country, did you ever sense that the feeling of dissent against Mubarak was so strong? Did you get the feeling that you were living in a country that could erupt at any moment into this kind of upheaval?
You definitely got this sense when you start talking to folks that they weren't happy with Mubarak. But really, the level of what we've seen, no, I wasn't expecting that at all. But like with a taxi driver, one of the things I can remember when we were first there, you would be in the taxi and our driver would quickly put this piece of cloth over, like a seatbelt over his chest when we were driving by some police. And so then he told me, well, there's a huge fine if you're found driving without seatbelts. Well, come to find out, what had happened was the Minister of Transportation decided everybody should have seatbelts in their taxis. But what happened was some relative of his, and I don't remember, you know, brother, cousin, some relative bought all the seatbelts in the country before this was passed. And so then these poor taxi drivers had to go and buy from this gentleman who had a monopoly, and they were extremely expensive. And so it was that type of thing that you would hear from people, just the corruption. And I just think they felt very fatalistic about it, like they had no control of anything. It was pervasive. One of the things that was most difficult for me to understand there, I mean, because, you know, it is a different culture, and you find things, you go, okay, I can adapt to this. One of the things that was hardest was the streets and watching people cross the street or people drive. When somebody walks across the street, they don't look left or right ever. Or when somebody's driving, they go through an intersection, they never look left or right. They just hit their horn once. Even if there's a stop sign, they go right through it. And so some friends and I were talking, and, you know, we started to wonder, is it really this, they say, inshallah, which means God willing, just kind of this mentality of everything's out of our hands. Everything is just feudalistic, that we don't have control. So you walk across the street, you know, you don't have any control of that. You don't have any control if the government's going to charge you for seatbelts that you don't want. So it was interesting.
You and Sandra and Seth mm-hmm. Are back in Sitka. You had probably lots of places you could have gone, lots of places closer to Cairo. Why Sitka? Why do we have you back here?
Yeah, that was an interesting one for us, because when we left 3 years ago, we cut our ties with Sitka. We sold our home. Seth would still come up in the summers, you know, because he just loves it. But for Sandra and I, we were like, that was a chapter that we're done with, and bought a house in Colorado. But when this came up, it wasn't even a second thought. You know, we knew that Seth would be able to get into the school. I know the people there. I know the job that they do there. So we felt very comfortable with that. And we knew we had friends that would, without even thinking twice, would make sure that we had a place to stay. And that probably has been one of the most humbling things when we got here, just to see the people who just would come to your help. It's interesting. Alaskans don't ask what they can do for you. They just do, which is really different than other places we've been. You know, people are always asking in Egypt when we first got there, oh, what can we do to help? What is it that you need? And it really struck me in Alaska, you don't hear that. All of a sudden you just have a loaf of bread at your door, or you have car keys in your hand, and you never had to ask. So I think that's why we ended up here.
Yeah, I would second that for sure. But this is just temporary. Do you want to go back? And what would have to happen politically for you to decide to go back?
We do want to go back. We have really enjoyed seeing our friends. We've enjoyed having clean air and rain. But we really enjoyed our life in Egypt. It was a new chapter, and we've enjoyed that chapter so far, and we don't feel like it's over. So we're very hopeful we'll be able to come back in 2-3 weeks by the end of February. Actually, we'll know for sure by the end of February if we're going to go back or not. Either we'll get a call from our employer that they'll need us, or we won't, and then we'll be looking for jobs. Politically, what has to happen, I don't know. I was just on Skype with a friend who's there now, and I think realistically the unrest isn't going to go away. I think that's going to be with Egypt for a while. Supposedly Mubarak stepping down today. If that happens today, you know, there's going to be a power vacuum, and that's never good. So everybody right now in Tahrir Square that's all united, I'm concerned once he steps down, then is that going to start to splinter because one group favors this person, one group favors this person? So I think politically it's going to be very uneasy for quite a while. I think we're okay with that, and we would go back as soon as the school says, come on back.
And in the meantime, how are you filling your days?
With work, we are still responsible for our students. So I have my face in a computer all day long, all night long. It's awful. They call it virtual school, and our students are required to report in, and we have assignments, and then they upload those assignments electronically, and we send them back electronically. For me, as a high school teacher, it has its own set of issues. My wife, as a first grade teacher, has its own set of issues with trying to deal with that. And you have students. I have students in New Delhi, Italy, France, Norway. You just name it. And so the time zone thing's an issue. So basically, I'm on the computer 24 hours a day, just about communicating with them and trying to keep them up to date, because it's very stressful for them. I teach an advanced placement statistics course, and there's a external exam that they're responsible for, and the seniors are very stressed. Some of them are actually enrolling in other schools, trying to do both so that in case their family's company doesn't bring them back to Egypt, they can move right into their new school. But yet they want to keep up to date with what we're doing in case they do go back. So for the kids, it's extremely stressful.
Well, as a chapter in your life, a pretty interesting chapter.
Yeah, no, that's, we wanted adventure. We like adventure, and we definitely got it here. So, we're definitely okay with our decision and have enjoyed it. And even, we second-guessed whether we should have come back or not, should we have stayed. But it's all right. It's all working out, and it'll work out for the best.